the hill. That's right. Testing that arc out. Well, you're not my favorite people, but if that's what you're asking. I mean. No, this is the cream of the crop that's here in flood weather. We're doing good. So tonight, this is a fifth Wednesday night, but we're not doing the singing. We're going to have our regular class tonight because we canceled last night or last week due to storms, the tornado warnings and whatnot. I had some stuff I wanted to cover, and so I didn't give it up. So I said, there, we're doing that. So tonight we're going to finish out the class. This will be the last week of the quarter, and next week we start our summer series, which is based on a passage about Christian character in Colossians. Tim Piles from Broken Arrow will be here next week, so that'll be exciting. What I want to do tonight was to wrap up and have a little discussion on loose ends from our generations class. I know it's been so many weeks since we talked about generations that you may have forgotten that's what the class was about. It wasn't a class on Proverbs, believe it or not. The Proverbs were just a tool for us to talk in between generations. So for 8 weeks or so, we went down to the fellowship hall and had you sit across from somebody of a different age group than you, which some of you found insulting, but that's too bad. You got over it. And you sat across from somebody different age than you, and you talked about some Proverbs and life lessons and so forth. We started out trying to answer the question. If I can move ahead here. Well, I tested my clicker a minute ago and it worked. So why? There it goes. The very first week of the class, we asked this question: is the generation gap our fault? In the beginning of our conversation, we said we feel like there is a disparity, a gap between even in our own membership and what we thought was a pretty close congregation. We do have some gap and some distance between different groups within it. To be fair, I've never been in a congregation that didn't have some kind of gap, right? It just happens. Unless everybody is exactly the same, you're going to have people that are different, and it turns out they get along differently. But we were concerned about it, so we asked, is it our fault? What conclusions might we have then based on our experiment discussing the Proverbs over in the fellowship hall and so forth? My answer is, yeah, actually it is our fault. Generations are meaningfully different. Now, that's just a fact, okay? People of different generations are different. There's a reason we call them generations and we call them different generations. They are different, no doubt about it. But we find out you, and by you I mean we, are capable of communicating with people of different generations. Did you find it impossible to talk to somebody of a different age group across the table from you? It wasn't impossible, right? Maybe somebody had to make you do it, right? I mean, it was really contrived. I know that. It was very contrived. Here's a table. Here's a sign. Old folks here, young folks here. Of course it was contrived. But when somebody said, here, talk about this, most of you told me you had meaningful conversations. Some of you made friends and told me that. People that you've been coming to church with for years but had really never sat across at any event or Bible study or fellowship meal, that you sat and talked to somebody, and I watched. I noticed some of you ended up sitting across from the same people every time. I thought about making you move, but I thought, no, okay, you made friends. That's the point. So, okay. And that's great. I mean, that proves the point. Of course you are capable of talking to people of different generations. It turns out the old folks aren't aliens to the young folks, and the young folks aren't aliens to the old folks. You have a lot of common ground, and that's why you come to a church like this, because you have common ground with people in the room. That said, you probably don't do it very much. It was contrived, right? We kind of had to make you do it. It's not something we do naturally. We have a tendency to be around people that are the most like us. Whenever that's the easier route, right? And so it took somebody to kind of shove us in a direction and hope it worked to make it work. So whose fault is that? Is the generation gap our fault? The answer is, if we can do it, and when we do it, it works, but we don't do it, that sounds like it's a personal problem, right? That we, young and old alike, deliberately choose to take the easy way out and not interact with people of different age groups, and we all do it. We find in a group, if there's 200 people in the room, we're going to find the three or four people who are the most like us and spend our time talking to them. Whether that's a family group or an age group or a career group or something else, neighborhood. Okay. Christianity has to intentionally work to overcome that. If you want to be a congregation, and we said this again in that very early lesson, if you want to be a congregation with more than one generation, and are there congregations that are not? Yes. There are congregations that are entirely older members. Okay? There are congregations that cater to younger people and have no older people in the room. It's all young families. Those two kinds of churches exist out there in the world. We said we don't want to be either one of those. Well, if you're going to be a congregation that has different groups of people under the same roof, then you do have to intentionally make an effort. You have to go out of your way to talk to people that you don't know or people that you do know and don't have a lot in common with. And that's a challenge. Any other observations about that point that was kind of the theme of the whole project? Anybody have any insights that they developed in 8 weeks of sitting across from people and talking? When you were older folks, when you were sitting across from younger folks, did you feel older? When I looked at the sign, right? Yeah. Huh? It was pointing right at you, yeah. Isn't that funny? Whichever side you sat on, you feel like you had to do that. Because some of you guys are kind of in between, depending on who you sat next to. It kind of depended on which side of the table you should be on. And yeah, whichever place you sat, you felt like you had to be that kind of person. Well, I've got to act like the older sage individual, or I'm the younger troublemaker in this group. I'll sit over here. I don't know. That's interesting. Any other observations from 8 weeks? James? Imagine that, right? I mean, it's so simple it hurts, but it really is a truth that the more you sit and talk to people, and you have been a member here before my time, right? So, and I'll just pick on James because he made the mistake of talking. James has been here longer than I have, right? He's been here as long as about anybody, with a few exceptions. And so the problem wasn't that James had never seen the person or never met the person. But how often, even in a church setting, are you compelled, because somebody mean made you, to sit across from somebody that you don't normally sit across from and forced to talk about things? Things of substance, not even how's the weather. That's an easy question, we all know that. But actually about proverbs, about life decisions, about choices and wisdom and things like that. So what it tells me is that we are going to have to be more personally resolved to do more of that. And as a church, we have to look for more opportunities to do that. I'm not saying we're going to have every class in the fellowship hall. That's not my point. But we are going to have to make some kind of effort to say, how can we as a church continue to do something that accomplishes that? Doesn't have to be that, but accomplishes that. That helps people sit in little groups and talk to people that they might ordinarily walk by. That's tonight's topic. Good. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. Yeah.
Let alone with older adults.
Yeah.
This is a...
Yeah.
This is my third thought. We're going to have all parts of their thoughts. Conversation. I see it every day.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it's so much generational as it is media and social media. Because, you know, back when you had 2, 6, and 8, and that's all you got.
Yeah.
Which is the way we grew up. We had pretty good communication with those in the country.
Okay.
But now we go all over the country chasing our kids, or we got this in our hand, or we got 250 channels we turn to, and we get buried in a lot of things besides communication.
Yeah. It is a skill you have to practice like anything else, and if you're not being forced to practice it, you don't develop it. That much is true. But that leads me to, there's a hand over here. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you another one, and this one's just borderline blasphemy, okay? I know, I'm going to get run out. You can sit in different places in the auditorium. Did you know that?
It would be counted absent.
You might be counted absent if you move. But it can be done, right? And it turns out, what happens when you sit in a different place in the auditorium? Someone gets mad because you're in their spot. No, better not. You end up meeting people that you almost forgot were here, right? This isn't the little old chapel on the hill. This is a big enough room that you can come in and out and never see the other people. It happens week after week by forcing yourself to say, you know, I'm going to plop down over there this time and see what happens. The people, who do you run to at the end of service? And I get why. You go to people that you want to see, right? I mean, it's the people, you have people that you're closer to than others. And this is the one or two or three times a week when you get to see those people. So you run to them and you check in on them. What happens is people that maybe don't have a close connection in the church see that as a group that they find it difficult to get in, so they walk on by. I was at a conference just a month ago, and they did this funny little experiment. Strangest thing, and a bunch of preachers made it even funnier. And he had six guys get up here and form a little huddle, okay? And they're all kind of locked arms like this. Six guys form a huddle, and then they have a seventh guy come up, and they tell the seventh guy, get into that circle, okay? Well, he barrels in. And one of the preachers turns around, I mean, just horse kicks this guy and shoves him. And they wrestle around a while. It was fairly entertaining. We were amused. And finally, the guy gets into the circle. The guy said, here's the funny thing. I never told anybody to keep him out. It was just a knee-jerk reaction. Form a circle. You get in there. And they assumed that guy needs to stay out. To the point of violence. Ministers. Maybe he's a youth minister, so maybe he didn't count. But still, they knocked the guy down. Okay? We're all like that. It's a default posture that we circle up. And people feel ostracized by that. It happens. Okay. Other question I was asked to address by one of our members, and it won't surprise you, it was one of our younger members that was in the class, said, would you say a word or two about technology? Because that did come up a lot. For better or worse, one of the things that divides generation is technological interaction. So start with communication. How did the silent generation communicate? Rotary telephone. The next generation, how do they touchtone phone? Gen X, a cell phone, but a simple cell phone, right? And then the next generation, the smartphone. Those are very different methods in the way they play out. Right, and how you learn the practice of communication, it is influenced by what communication is available. So let's talk a little bit about how we view technology as a church and as generations. First point I want to make, I'm stealing from a science fiction author because he happens to be right. It's the guy who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Wrote a book where he's talking about technology. It has a great name. It's called The Salmon of Doubt, which explains nothing. But anyway, he says this is how you interact with technology by generations. He says anything that is in the world when you're born is normal and ordinary and is just a natural part of the way the world works. Okay? If it was there when you were born, normal. Which obviously depends now when you're born. I sat Lucas in front of a computer the other day, and he's looking at the mouse and the keyboard. He starts touching the screen. I said, no, you use the mouse. What are they teaching you, right? But he'd never interacted one that required you to use this other device, this peripheral device, right? And he's keep poking the screen. Okay, whatever you was there when you were born, that's natural. That's normal. Okay. Anything that's invented between when you're 15 and 35 is new and exciting and revolutionary, and you can probably get a career in it. Okay? So there's a window there of about 20 years where stuff gets developed and you say, that's kind of exciting. I could learn that. I might go into that business. Keith, what business are you in? And when did you get into, well, not anymore. You don't have a real job now. You're just a coach. But when you were working for a living, you worked in technology. I went from James to you. We're just moving around. But introduced to your first computer at 16 and decides to make a career out of. Right? I mean, the math works out. And that's kind of the way it goes. Okay? But what happens if it comes along after that? Anything invented after you're 35 is against the natural order. That's the way we react, right? That for us, that's a whole step removed from something I was prepared to learn. Some of you are pointing at each other. This is fun. You know it's true, right? It is. That it's just kind of at some point in your life, I don't want to learn a new thing. I had a perfectly good thing yesterday. Stop handing me new stuff. But for somebody else, that was the thing they were handed. It's the first thing they ever learned. It's natural as anything, right? Natural as walking. Yeah. I've got a slide on that. We're coming to that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So let's ask the question then. That's how we react to technology, but is technology good or bad? Is technology good? Well, technology is useful to the cultural mandate given to humanity. In Genesis 1 and verse 28, you're supposed to subdue the earth. And what humans have done for all of human history is develop new ways to subdue the earth. Once upon a time, the plow was new, right? Some guy said, you know what I'd really like? You know, it'd help me plant crops. A plow. Well, he didn't say a plow. I didn't have a name yet, but you get the point. He said, I bet you I could make something that would make that easier. The dams that hold back water sometimes, right? That was a way of subduing nature. We didn't want Lake Keystone to flood us every time. Well, we didn't want the river to flood us every time, so we made Lake Keystone, and that didn't work out. But the point was, the idea was, we could develop something to subdue nature. We could control floods. Limited success, but that was the idea, right? And so, yeah, technology is useful for that, and we've been doing that. Medicine is a way we subdue nature. There's a lot of things out there that want to kill you. Some of them are very tiny and live in your body. And so medicine comes along and says, we're going to subdue nature. We're going to make it where that doesn't kill you anymore. Okay? However, technology was often developed by ungodly people. The first people in the Bible said to develop anything are not good people. This comes from Genesis chapter 4. This is after Adam and Eve are kicked out of the garden. This is after Cain and Abel, the descendants of Cain, develop instrumentation, cities, bronze working, metallurgy, and they're described in the different areas of expertise. They weren't good people, but they were clever people, and they developed things. What did they do with it? Did they subdue the earth to bring glory to God? I'm guessing probably not. They did things to bring glory to themselves. We get that indicated in Scripture. People do different things with expertise and know-how. Noah built an ark. That's a fairly impressive technological adventure, right? I have trouble building a shelf. He built an ark. That's incredible. But then his descendants built the Tower of Babel, which was also brilliant, right? Technological advance, terrible idea. Both examples of making use of knowledge and human knowledge and intuition and technology in different ways. Turn to Exodus chapter 31. Exodus 31, 1 through 6. Everybody knows the story of Bezalel, right? Everybody's favorite Bible character, Bezalel. Exodus 31, 1 through 6. The Lord said to Moses, see, I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, son of Hur, the tribe of Judah, and I have filled him with the Spirit of God, with ability and intelligence, with knowledge and all craftsmanship, to devise artistic designs, to work in gold, silver, and bronze, in cutting stones for setting, and in carving wood, to work in every craft. And behold, I have appointed with him Aholiab and the son of Ahisamach of the tribe of Dan, and I have given to all able men ability that they may make all that I have commanded you. in building the tabernacle, there was some craftsmanship involved. In fact, some innovation. They had to do some things they hadn't done before. These were Egyptian slaves, and they might have been good stonemasons, but what other skills did they have? God says, don't worry about it. I have a man, and I have given him the gift of know-how to be able to do some things. So you're going to have a tabernacle. It's going to be fine. I have made it possible. You can read again in Exodus 35, 31 and 32, something similar. Let's start in verse 30. Then Moses said to the people of Israel, see, the Lord has called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, the son of the tribe of Judah, and he was filled with the Spirit of God, with skill, with intelligence, with knowledge, and with all craftsmanship, to devise artistic designs, to work in gold and silver and bronze, and cutting stones for setting, and he goes on to say all the things he did. That technological advances was a gift of God, that God wanted them to be able to do things and be skillful in it. I know it's not the internet, but at that moment in history, that was technology, right? They learned how to do something they had never done before, and they did it really well. Those gifts were used to glorify God. Is that always what we do with innovation and technology? We glorify God with it? 2 Chronicles 26, 14 through 16 tells a very different story later in the history of Israel. 2 Chronicles 26, 14 through 16. And Uzziah prepared for all the army shields and spears and helmets, coats of mail, bows and stones for slinging. In Jerusalem he made machines invented by skillful men to be on the towers and the corners and to shoot arrows and great stones. And his fame spread far, and he was marvelously helped till he was strong. So here's a guy who's an innovator. He's a machine builder. He even uses that word. He's a machine builder of weapons of war, right? He is developing militaristic technology. What does he do with it? Verse 16, but when he was strong, he grew proud to his destruction, for he was unfaithful to the Lord his God and entered the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of the incense, and on it goes. He was a technological genius, but rather than bringing God glory with it, it brought about his downfall. So, technology and craftsmanship can be, and in fact are, gifts of God. They can bring God glory, or they can bring God shame, or bring you shame in God's sight. So my conclusion, to use a fancy word, technology is inert. Inert's what we would say in chemistry class. If you got a chemical and it doesn't do anything, it's inert. It doesn't do anything. Technology doesn't do anything. Let me give you some thoughts on that. Anytime that we say A is making people B, if A is some kind of technology or tool, this sentence will always be false because tools don't make anybody anything. And I know this because we're in a red state, right? So you know how this logic works, okay? Let's talk about guns for a second. Don't we hear this all the time? Guns are making people violent. Is that true? Gun can't make anything anybody. Can't be done. I meant to say anybody anything, but we'll go with anything anybody. Randy caught it. Try as you, with the exception of Devin, apparently, guns are an instrument. They have no power of causation. They have no independent will. They don't make anybody anything. And that doesn't mean that I want everybody to have one in their pocket. I'd rather Lucas didn't have one at the particular moment, right? Weapons of mass destruction don't make people violent. But just the same, I'd prefer you didn't have one, right? So the question of whether they ought to be regulated, that's a whole other question. But the argument, well, you know, guns, they just make people violent. No, they don't. Turns out, if you go, remember Genesis again, Genesis chapter 6, why did God flood the earth? Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, and all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. With what? Throwing rocks at each other? Apparently. I mean, they didn't require any help. Whatever they had at their disposal, they went out and killed each other with. If you'd have given them a machine gun, they'd have used that. But they didn't need it to be violent. The earth was filled with violence in the Stone Age. Technology wasn't the problem. Technology was a tool that violent people have always used. Should we be cautious about it? Yes, we should. But I don't get to blame tools for the things people do. Does that make sense? Let me give you another one. Birth control is making people promiscuous. Probably the most influential cultural development of the last century was birth control. I mean, as a cultural game changer, if you had to pick one out, other than the internet, maybe including the internet, birth control changed the way people behaved. Except it didn't, did it? Because birth control can't make anybody do anything. It's a chemical. It's a pill. It turns out, before birth control, people really liked having sex. Is this a surprise to anybody? Now, they found a tool that made it so that they could do what they wanted without some of the obvious consequences. And so people that might have talked themselves out of something stupid before didn't have to after. But who's responsible for that? The gun didn't kill you, and the birth control didn't make you have sex. People were promiscuous in the Bible, too, and they didn't need any help. Read Genesis. They're really promiscuous. Okay. So finally, then, I get to our point about technology. Cell phones are making people isolated and antisocial. Well, are they a tool that is sometimes used by people who want to... Can I pull this out and ignore you easier? Yes, I can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have to talk to you now, right? Because I've got a tool in my hand that allows me to ignore you in a way that I couldn't before. It's easier now. In the same way that a gun makes it easier to kill another person than a rock. But ultimately, who is responsible for that behavior? It's always been people. Because it turns out, people kind of like to be isolated. It's risky business building relationships with other people. And so every time something comes along that allows us to ignore other people, we grab it. Because this isn't even the first time it's happened. You go back, do a little research, listen to sermons that were being written in the 1960s. TVs are killing the American family. TVs are killing the American family. They don't talk to each other. They don't spend any time together anymore. Was the TV the problem? It was a tool. If you wanted to ignore your kids, a TV with sports on it was a great way to do it. Right? But it turns out if you wanted to ignore your kids, you're going to ignore them anyway. The TV didn't make you antisocial, didn't make you a bad dad. But it could sure be a tool you could use if you wanted to. Before that, did we find ways to ignore each other? This is one of my favorite pictures from the history of pictures, this next one. Okay. Now, none of these people have a cell phone in their hands. Are they being particularly sociable? They're all getting up and talking to each other and making new friends? No. Why not? They didn't want to. If you don't want to be sociable, if you don't want to talk to people, you're not going to. So we have to be aware that technology gives us opportunities to do things at a higher rate and with less dangerous consequences. And so it can definitely get away from it. Okay? Instead of a newspaper, I have a cell phone and I can get any newspaper in the world. I can ignore you for hours. Eventually, with that, I'm going to finish the crossword and I have to talk to you again. With my cell phone, I have an infinite number of crossword puzzles. I never have to get done and talk to you. See the point? No.
As a father who has been real good at controlling phones, it doesn't make them studious attend.
Yeah.
Just because it's outside of mind,
I mean, that,
just so you know,
that's... It's not a silver bullet. I mean, it is a tool. It is something that can produce a bad habit in behavior. Taking it away doesn't suddenly create a sociable child, right? Because there's something in the human condition. The same thing with violence, same with promiscuity, the same thing with isolation. We just find new and more exciting ways to do it. And we run everything this way. Information technology. I'm a West Wing fan. Keith, you're a West Wing fan, so you'll... You know, there's a scene where they're talking about the future. Leo McGarrity's the old guy, and he's talking about the future and how technology was supposed to deliver, you know, great things. And he says, hasn't done anything for us. Email's just a faster way to get porn. Where's my jetpack? And it's a great sentiment that he says, all I see you doing with technology are dangerous, terrible things. We were told technology was going to do great things, but it turns out people use it for what they want to. And if people want to go and destroy themselves with technology, they do. And a lot of people really do, because it turns out humans are pretty self-destructive. So here's my conclusions. People will make use of whatever tools are at their disposal to do whatever they want to do. The existence of technology has consequences, but it doesn't cause anything. So what are we going to do with it? Well, you know what to do because you've been in the class on Proverbs. There is a word in the Bible for the proper use of God's gifts. Anybody know what that word is? Proverbs is the hint. The proper use, knowing how to properly use God's gifts. Wisdom. Wisdom is the difference between a person, the wise man and the fool are the two characters in the book of Proverbs. All of them have all the same opportunities and all the same resources. The fool makes a mess of his life, and the wise man does something with it. Wisdom is the difference. And we need, as technology develops, we need wisdom. You can't put the genie back in the bottle, but we can, as parents and as grandparents, as a church, teach some wisdom about how to use this. I remember it was 10 years ago. It wasn't that long. I'm not that old. A professor was telling me, older professor, and Facebook was like at its zenith at that moment. And he says, you know, our generation wrote the book on how to send a polite email. And the generation before us wrote the book on how to send a polite letter. Your generation's going to have to figure out how to use Facebook. Someone's going to have to be wise and say, this is what it's good for, and that's terrible. Don't do that. And I thought at that time, I thought, wow, that's really true. That the book just hasn't been written. I don't mean a literal book. I mean the standards of decency don't exist yet. That the technology has developed faster than the rate of wisdom. And so just like a machine gun in the hands of a child, without wisdom, what happens? Terrible things. Okay? So technology requires wisdom. Where do we get wisdom? From the old guys, right? I mean, yes, from God's word, from the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But the book of Proverbs taught us, go ask an old person. So what was your comment a minute ago? Ask them how to use your cell phone. Todd, here's your slide. Here we go. Old people need young people to show them how to use technology. Young people need old people to show them how to make use of technology. Yeah, the kids are going to learn how to operate it faster than you. But they don't know what should be done with it. They don't know when you should put your phone in your pocket, David, and have a conversation with an adult. Right? They need wisdom from us to say, hey, that's great that you know how to do that. Let me tell you how to use it properly. And you don't even know how to, you don't have to know how to turn the thing on to do that, Todd. That's the best part. I mean, really. Right? You don't have to even understand the technology to be able to say, at some point you need to learn how to have a conversation with another human being. So how about you stick that in your pocket for a minute? And you invent rules. And they're arbitrary rules, right? Every family has some arbitrary rules. You need them. No screens at the table, right? One of our rules, no screens at the table, okay? With Lucas, we had to invent another one, no screens while walking because he kept running into things. Listen. You aren't good enough yet to walk and chew bubblegum at the same time, let alone use a touch screen. No screens while walking. That's why people get hit by semis. Okay? No screens at the table. No screens. They need older people to say, here's how to make use of that. They can figure out how to do it. It bothers me a great deal that Lucas can already do some things on his iPad that I cannot. I was smart yesterday, and now I'm dumb, and I don't know when that happened. Remember that slide at the beginning? When you turn 35, I'm 36, and suddenly I don't want to learn how to use his little fire tablet. I don't want to know. Just hit the button, do it. But an older person can teach, when is it appropriate? What are good things to do with it? What are bad things to do with it? And churches need to be leading the way in that. There is not another institution in our community whose job it is to instill wisdom. There are other institutions that can participate. Our schools can participate, and sometimes they do, and that's great. There are other groups and activities. I'll pick on my kids again. Lucas does martial arts. And one of the reasons we have him doing that is it requires you to be in a room without a screen for an hour and learn how to do certain things and pay attention and be quiet. We wanted a skill that required you to stand still and be quiet. We said, Taekwondo, here we go, and chess. I didn't teach my kid chess because I wanted to play chess, because I wanted to be able to sit at a table and not move his fingers for a second. Right? And so you can teach those skills. But again, families do it, yeah. Schools do it, yeah. But it's the church that has, we've got the resource of wisdom. We've got generations of older people who have wisdom to pass on. We've got God's goodness in the book of Proverbs to guide us. And here's where we need to be teaching the wisdom to use the technology. And they're going to have to teach their kids. Because whatever crazy hologram thing that Jeff invents that my kids have to deal, it'll be Jeff. It's all his fault. See, Keith, I'll let you off the hook. Jeff will invent the next thing, and it will be terrible and unnatural, and I'll hate it, but my kids will have to teach the next generation. Well, it's great that you can do that, but here's how to do that and when to do that. And churches have to lead the charge on that. Thoughts or comments on that discussion about technology and wisdom and how they interact? Because, boy, we need it. Sir. So we have a situation where several institutions are coming apart at once. Families are not in good shape. Churches are not in good shape. Technology is exceeding our ability to be wise about it, right? All of that happening at once, it makes for a kindling situation. Something's going to burn, right? It is a time where wisdom is needed in all of those institutions to put them back together. Absolutely. You're really old.
And they've all had doubts about that next group.
It's true.
Serious doubts about the moral compass.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I can remember my grandparents saying that their parents' generation had just abandoned everything and it's all terrible.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think to a certain extent it's a false perception that the next generation has a moral problem.
Yeah.
And it's a false perception that the generation that came before you is foolish. That's just old people.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's true. What you said is true. We're obviously families
yeah.
are falling apart. The church is less influential than it used to be. At the same time, I see a lot of things in these young generations that give me hope. And I see them looking yeah. for authenticity, and I see them moving toward the church where I saw their parents move away sometimes. Literally, their actual parents. So I don't know. I'm a little bit hopeful.
Yeah. My preaching mentor growing up, like to say, I have friends on both sides of that issue, and I always agree with my friends. So I'll say, you know, both of you had something there that was worth saying, right? There is a tendency to always think the generation before you was naive and ignorant, and the generation after you was immoral and dangerous, right? Sure, we all do think that. Sometimes we're right. I mean, it does happen. If you read the book of Judges, sometimes a generation came up, and they really were bad. I mean, it does happen. Some of the crisis we're facing in American culture is not imaginary. Some of it, I am hopeful that we'll, to use a phrase, grow out of. I think it was Randy and I that were talking about when did Gen X get smart? right? I mean, like, when did they become the reasonable ones that we wanted to hire? We thought they were the renegades and the troublemakers, and it turns out, you know, actually they're paying their taxes and getting jobs, and they turned out fair to middling, you know.
Right now,
they're paying all the taxes right now. Yeah, that's right, because millennials don't have a job. Right. So, yeah, I mean, that's something. But so generations do develop as they age. And some of the hopeless cases turned into hopeful cases. I'm hopeful about that, for sure. But there is a crisis that will have to be addressed at the same time. The book of Judges doesn't just show cycles, it shows a downward spiral where every time it dips lower, and every time it comes up, it doesn't get quite to where it was before. The heroes are not, Deborah's at the beginning of the book, Samson's at the end, right? Even the heroes are pretty lousy by the end of the book, that sometimes the dips get lower. And so cultures can have a pitch to them. The Roman Empire certainly did, and I feel like America is in a particular low moment. I would like us to recover, and I would like to be optimistic, and I would like that to be true. I just know it doesn't have to be. Todd?
Well, that's kind of an
indicator
if you look at history. When those downward spirals started is when their perception of life began to be questioned and the value of life became less and less.
So what's the solution? Let's take the bad prognosis. Let's say that we're in a skid. We're in a dip, and it's going down, and it's going to be ugly. What would be the solution to that? Biblically speaking, if there's any hope, I mean, there's two options. Go to the storm cellar and hold on for dear life is one option. If you think it can't be saved, then go form a monastery and just leave America alone to crumble and die. I mean, that's one option. I don't like that option, right? But that's people have done it, right? Option two is this is exactly the moment when we need wisdom. The people that notice something is going wrong have to do something about it. And doing something about it doesn't just mean talking about it among yourselves. And I'm just picking on older folks because they're the ones who notice. God bless you. You've noticed there's something wrong. But if all you do is talk to other older folks about how bad it is, the folks that need to hear about it never heard. How does that other group hear? You can't actually tell them anything, can you? That's just truth. You can't tell somebody younger than you anything. I thought that was true, and now I know it's true because I have kids. Right? You have to build a relationship. When you build a relationship with another person, when you sit across the table time and time again and eat and get invested in their life or cut up limbs in their yard or whatever it is you do, when you make an investment in their life and you're there at their football games and you're there at their activities and you ask about their school, then they might listen to you when you say, by the way, our culture is failing in front of our eyes. Please listen to me, right? You don't sound like a crazy person anymore. You're a person they might listen to. You might also be crazy, but they might listen. And that's what churches do have to develop. We have a lot of young people here. We need gray-headed people showing up at their softball games and visiting them and talking to them in the hallway. And every time I see a little kid go and run and hug an older person, I think, we're winning, right? Check. That's what's supposed to be happening. Make old friends. They'll save us. Yeah.
I think one thing that makes this generation different is they're learning to do things online, detached, and with anonymity. And
yeah.
There's no accountability. Where they feel like they're not really hurting someone, they can't see them face to face.
Yeah. Yeah, technology does have a way of distancing you from consequences sometimes. So in the same way, again, birth control distances you from the consequence of sex. Or a machine gun means you don't have to see the knife go into somebody, right? I did it from a distance. It's okay. That it does create some distance. And technology has created distance. You can be really mean and hateful to people online, and you don't have to look at them. But the problem is, you wanted to be mean and hateful in the first place. You just couldn't get away with it before. What was wrong with us? Why are we these people? Yeah. 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 Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. All right, they're kicking the doors open. Means I have to stop. Thanks for the class. I appreciate your comments and everything, and bearing with us in our little experiment down the hall in Proverbs. Next week, summer series.